It's Confirmed with Tomiko Torres, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey guys, welcome back. Happy Tuesday. Gee, I hope everyone has had a great weekend, great start of the week, enjoying the weather, hopefully. Hopefully everybody's well, not sick. It's always a good thing. For me, guys, I'm feeling just fine. A little under the weather due to allergies, of course. But other than that, everything is all good on this end of the world. I want to do some catching up with you guys because I want to talk to you about Glenn Mills School. I know we talked about it. We talked about Glenn Mills School. We talked about some of the abusers. We talked about the kids that were murdered, that who knows whatever happened to the bodies, were they ever recovered? I mean, it's just a little weird on how they cover up things when they want to cover them up. You know what I mean? Like, I know for sure, and it doesn't matter if it's your first offense. I know people that went to prison for kidnapping and, you know, hiding children or giving them to the other parent for a fee. I know that the minimum sentence is 15 to 20 years. And it's just amazing how we talked about the King Hill story. And now, you know, young lady's getting like 15 to 20 years for murder. No body. No trace of any teeth. You know, even if a body burns, you still got teeth that remain. None of that, you know, cadaver dogs could actually find remains. And that's what they're used for. It just, you know, it just goes to show you how the system, and I'm not going to say everybody's dirty, but there's a lot of dirty people that wear uniforms and hold badges and don't keep it truthful with the public. You know, like I got my own gripe because the King Hill story, for it to be national, worldwide. And by the way, guys, that was my doing. I'll take the credit for that. Thank you. Patting myself on the back. But I'll tell you this. I take disappearances of babies and anybody that's disappeared. I take it very seriously because it's serious business. But just to show you the collusion and the lies of how people can get away with saying and doing things that you would never even imagine. Things such as lying, withholding the truth. Now, you guys remember, now we got a caller that's going to call in. I spoke about someone exposing to me that there were children hiding, not hiding, I take that back. The system was hiding the children in the DHS building. Someone said to me, listen, they saw baby formula, they saw beds, not beds, but like blow up mattresses. They saw blankets, they saw food. And guys, I'm gonna recant. I'll ask the producers to go back and air one of those shows. When we talk about that, it had to be like well over a year ago. And everybody that comes on the show probably thinks this lady is crazy. It's impossible for them to hide, conceal, lie about kids living in the DHS building. Well, guys, guess what? It's been put forth now. The media has put it out there. And they're like, guess what? there's kids living in Center City in the DHS building. It's not what I'm saying. It is what it is. And the caller is on, but I'll let the caller on, but I'll finish this. Hey, caller.
Hello.
Hey, how are you today?
Hey, D'Amico.
That's me.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Now, caller, hang on with me just a second here, okay? Because I want to clear the air about something. And I think you were probably privy to this show. You remember I talked about maybe a year ago, I don't know if you remember or not, but the kids, someone like gave me a little sticky note that said there were kids living in the basement of the DHS building because they witnessed baby formula, clothing that belongs to kids, bedding, blow up beds, food, and they saw kids in the basement at the DHS building in Center City. I don't know if you were privy to that show or not, but okay, I'm updating the listeners because now this allegation, which everything I talk about is confirmed, this allegation, according to a lot of people, is actual fact. And what I'm trying to understand is, how do they believe the media over a person such as myself? Because now the media has put it out there and they're like, oh my gosh, there's kids living in the Center City DHS building. When I said this a year ago. So it's kind of crazy how it has to hit the media and people don't listen to me. They listen to the media when I talked about this a year ago. But we'll get back to that, guys. Caller, I was anxious to hear your voice today because not only were you a part of the mayhem of the abusive Visions Quest saga that went on, but I had some questions for you in regards to Vision Quest because you spent how much time there?
I spent a little bit, about 26 months there.
And out of the 26 months, were you ever allowed to call home?
I mean, back then you used phone booths. They used to take you to phone booths, you know, somewhere in the street in a van. But after you allow to call. You allow a phone call like once a week. And a staff member always standing right there over you. What I remember, and it's a long process to make it home, so I don't remember how the phone calls went. But you had to get yourself prepared to live in the world again because you never seen a house or a door or a bed or inside of a home. So they put you inside of a home to immune you back to regular life because we lived outside in the grass, inside teepees and rode mules and wagons.
We didn't even see
inside of a house or something.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Vision Quest, according to their, their proposed business plan, we'll call it that. It doesn't say that you live outside. So you mean to tell me you didn't have a bed with a room, with a door?
What did you say? You said that stuff say it don't say nothing about living outside.
I mean, it says that they have like a camp activity where you go outside and you learn like nature. It doesn't say you live outside.
Oh, you're telling me
you live outside You couldn't call from a staff phone. You call from a pay phone.
Yeah, they take about 8 to 10 kids at a time to a pay phone somewhere and let you use the pay phone with a calling card.
Wait a minute. I'm a little confused because this is not what the government was paying them all these hundreds of thousands of dollars for to house you outside.
They gave you really nice sleeping bags when you entered the program. They gave you a warm coat. They gave you warm wool socks. They gave you underwear brand new, everything brand new from head to toe. And that's what you got that's supposed to last you through the whole time that you got to be there. I'm talking about sleeping bags look like they was about $400 or $500 sleeping bags. It wasn't cheap.
Well, I wouldn't expect them to be cheap if you're going to be sleeping outside the whole winter.
Say that again.
I wouldn't expect them to be cheap if you're sleeping outside the whole winter.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, they gave us good winter gear. Can say that. You get it brand new the minute you come in there, but you have to make that last you for your 1 year, your 2 year, your 3 year, whatever you're there for. It looks very nasty.
That is
disgusting
really...
after so many months, so it don't look nasty.
So, did you ever, now that you're a grown man, you ever ask your mother, you know, did they ever mention to her that they were going to be taking you to another state besides Philadelphia?
No, I actually asked my mom about that. My mom said because we was poor and we lived in the projects, we just seemed like targets. She really didn't know what to do. All she knew is where I was at.
Well, how
never
does
really
she know where
exactly
you were at
where, but she
when
knew
you
I was
lived
in this program.
Outside somewhere.
Say it again.
Okay, so let's talk about when you relocated to living outside from Philadelphia to Florida. Like, how long did it take you to get to Florida from Philadelphia? And what was your means of transportation to get there?
Well, it wasn't Philadelphia. It was South Mountain, Pennsylvania, near Gettysburg. That's where Impact Camp is set up at in South Mountain, Pennsylvania. You leave from South Mountain, Pennsylvania section, not literally on that mountain, but below the mountain. They go back and forth from South Mountain, well, this campsite, from South Mountain to Yeehaw Junction, Florida. The means of transportation, I know everybody going to wonder how, but it was mules. Mules and wagons. The same mules and wagons if you look them up online. And they must have had this planned out and GPSed out back then because it took 6 months from Pennsylvania to Florida to reach Yeehaw Junction and back. And that's what we do. We go back and forth. You, if you come into the program before we get to Florida, you could come in Atlanta. You could come in North Carolina. You could come in one of those other states, but that's the journey.
So when you guys lived outside, what did you eat?
We ate what they served schools and jails. The Cisco truck delivered food to these 18 where we had like, to each campsite might have been 5 18-wheeler trucks that they gassed up and owned that either traveled the teepee poles, that traveled the cook shack. It was like a food truck, but the whole back of an 18-wheeler truck was the food truck. That opened up like a big kitchen. And we ate under tarps. Like when you put your teepee up, you put up another tarp over your bench, like eating bench, and that's, you ate outside. You went in line to get your food outside. We had a trailer full of porta potties. It must have been 20 porta potties in a row on the back of an 18 wheeler. And you walked up there like almost like an old carnival ride, and it was lined up with porta potties. And yeah, you went to school outside. The teachers was on site. You went to school every day, even in the summer, even during the holiday. You might have been off on Christmas Day, on New Year's, on Thanksgiving, and the weekends. Otherwise, you was in school.
Okay, well, let me just stop you for a second. So we don't confuse anybody with what year this was, because slavery was over in 1865. So what year was this?
I was in there from 93 to 95, like 92 to 95, somewhere like that. I went in there around like 92 because I was like 12 going on 13. I got out at 15.
So was this like, what kind of program did they call it, if you remember?
They called it a wilderness program.
Is that what they told you?
Yeah, wilderness. I know that. I don't even. Wilderness. It was a wilderness impact program, impact camp. One of them, the impact camp. I guess the one that's on the train be more wilderness. And then you got Ocean Quest. They out on the water. They used to go to Hawaii, to Germany. They traveled the seas for real.
And we're talking about kids.
Kids. They was scrubbing the deck, sailing the boat all the way 20 feet in the air on a sail. Getting it together because it's blowing wrong. All that. They show you all that. It looks as dangerous as all ever. But yes.
So they had...
Supposedly the boat had a motor. Huh?
They had a bunch of inexperienced children operating boats, driving... Well, let me ask you. Who actually drove the mules? Like, you know, there had to be somebody, you know, who you know, was sitting behind the mule. I mean, I don't mean to laugh, but who is actually the driver behind the mule?
Us. I actually almost killed a friend from Southwest Philadelphia. He fell in between the mules. The mules got startled, ran him, stomped him first, and then ran him over. I mean, he was broken up into several pieces. I had to help feed him and get him his food for months.
Do you remember this friend?
Yeah, his name was Charles Berry. I wonder about him sometime. We called him Chuck C. Note from up there, 58th and King Sessions somewhere.
Charles Berry.
Yeah. Yeah. Almost like to kill him. We was cool. We was friends, man. And it was a dangerous situation. I watched people get kicked in their face, head split. And you would think that they will go home. They'd get a medical leave. Nah, they'd be right in the teepee, healing up.
So these teepees, so I take it because, you know, you're with adults and they're supposed to be responsible for you guys. Uh-huh. So there was no doctor that came out and said, let's take a look at Chuck and see what's going on with him?
No, I remember they took Chuck to one of them Michael Myers hospitals down there, down south. And that's it. You know what? You, now that you mentioned that, I don't really remember a nurse on site. Maybe it was, but I don't remember seeing an actual nurse. We had, like, emergency kits. We had people that was trained to do certain things, but, like, an on-site nurse or doc, no. We had on-site horse wranglers. I don't remember a nurse, maybe at the impact camp, but not on the train.
Well, let me ask you this. Ocean Quest. Why didn't you ever go to Ocean Quest?
Well, to go to any part of the program, I made it to Buffalo Soldiers. I know that might sound crazy to people, but they had us marching and soldiering like old black soldiers, doing really decent, like, maneuvers and drill steps like they do in colleges, sort of like, you know, fraternities. It almost felt that way. When I tried to get the Ocean Quest, I didn't make it because you would have to tread water and like 12 feet of water in a swimming pool somewhere. And you have to tread water for 30 minutes without touching the edge. And I want to say I made it to about 20 minutes. It was very extreme to stay on top of water. But I guess that's a little test to see if you can make it on a boat. Because if anything ever happens to the boat, y'all all in the ocean. It was sleeping quarters on the boat, like a real ship. It was really big, like something that'd be in Penn's Landing. It was a really big sailboat.
So, you're telling me from 92 to 95. I'm just curious, how many times did you speak to your mother from 92 to 95?
I'll pay about good 12 times, maybe. You know? Say it again.
There was no visiting hours? There was no visiting hours?
Well, you far. My mom visited me one time before I went on a train. The closest she could come visit me was in South Mountain. She made it up there on a bus trip. I remember her crying her way on out of there. And that was right before I went to the train. I got like a visit before I went to the train. Like, really wasn't going to come. You really wasn't going to visit me once I leave. It was almost impossible. I never seen nobody get a visit. Visits is over after you leave impact camp.
Wow. Because even in prison, you know, having the legal right to keep family ties together, that was basically stolen from you and many others.
You know, when I do my homework on this program and I listen to you with all your investigations, this was hard. I'm blessed that I made it through. And I wasn't a victim to the fifth power. I was a victim, but I was a whistleblower. I believe because I was so outspoken and didn't bite my tongue for nothing, and there was many others in there like me, you know, Lil G's in the street. But then you had a lot of gullible people. You had a lot of people in there that were getting tested by the staff because they didn't know things. They didn't know how to read. They didn't know how to fill out an envelope to write home. They didn't know how to write a letter. And when you don't know how to do that, you start asking how. They ask the staff because they figure that's the most educated way to find out. And then the staff, to me, used that weakness in people to take advantage of them, whatever it might be. You don't know how to read, you don't know how to write, you don't know how to talk. You stressed out. I never needed their help. I never wanted their help for nothing. They called me a manipulator. I'm scheming the program, pretty much what they were saying. I'm not using the program. I see it now in the way you put things out there. I look at it as though I just wasn't gullible enough for the people, you know, because it was a lot of people in there that was getting taken advantage of in so many different ways. And I've been tested in the dark with staff. They never got to that point, but I felt uncomfortable. Things they were asking, the way they putting their hands on me. It's just us in this dark room with this little light. I know it's 11:30 at night, but it's still uncomfortable. And nobody actually
just you and a staff member?
Just me and a weird staff member. He's supposed to be like, you know, the person to talk to. You know, if you was looking a little stressed out today, he'll ask you, do you need to talk? You know, I say something like, no, I'm fine. They'll come get you anyway. When the lights go down or when they lay everybody down and is pretty much lights out, you know, even though the Young Bucks still be up talking, they'll come pull you out of there. Hey, so-and-so, come on out. So-and-so want to talk to you. And then they take you on a walk. I mean, you're outside. They take you on this long wood walk. Or they take you in one of them little offices or something, in one of them little, like, shacks that they built, like, you know, school shacks. They were like little buildings they built, little one-story buildings. Yeah. Yes.
So how does it...
It's unfortunate.
I mean, it's a really sad thing that happened to you. My heart goes out to you being able to talk about it. But, you know, who was your judge that even sentenced you to this program? Do you remember?
Well, I never had a chance to go through Judge Reynolds. And what I'm hearing, he was the only black judge. All my judges was white. So, no, I don't remember who they were. But it was never good. And I know a lot of friends out here, a lot of people that have been through these situations. And since you had these conversations about your show, I've been trying to get them to open up, maybe participate in the show. And I get to see that with you, with your homework bringing to it, there's a lot of people more hurt, a little bit more destroyed about what happened to them in these placements than what you know. And they ain't willing to talk about it. And when you ask them about it, their facial expressions say a lot. Their body language say everything. And like people dealing with some stuff that nobody can help them out with. And like I say, I know fact that young guys was messing with the women's staff. So I know fact that the men was messing with the children in there. Fact. Couldn't really point them out. But I know for a fact that a lot of that was going on in there.
So
like
what about
season. And now that all this come out, it's just crazy.
What about, does Judge Christopher Connor sound familiar to you?
Judge Christopher Connor sounds very familiar.
Or Judge Conahan, Michael Conahan.
Yeah. Yeah, you know that courthouse that housed all them judges that sent all of my generation, the kids, away. You know, I even had a female that I was close with from Vision Quest. She was in the female program in Vision Quest, the female side. She was a very gorgeous chocolate girl, and she was built like a woman back then. So if I was only 14, 15, shoot, Pat looked like she was already 22. And she came home. Pat never got right. Pat went down and down and down over the years that I've known her. But before she went down, she told me that she was constantly being molested in Vision Quest, like consistently by different staff. Cried, told me that on the corner one day outside a little Chinese store. We was hanging out. I ain't even know if I believed her back then. But I believed her. I was just more shocked. I was in awe. She said it like she ain't had no control of it. You know, Pat liked me, but something was wrong with Pat and disturbing by Pat. And I just could never get into it. I more so felt sorry for her than anything. She said she was in there pregnant twice. She wasn't pregnant by none of the young boys because we weren't even allowed to be near none of the girls.
How do you feel?
Are you pregnant? Say it again.
How do you feel hearing? And now this is where it becomes a little tricky, where the system can write up something and say, such as, Judge Conahan was sentenced to more than 17 years in prison, but then he was released. So how do you give someone 17 years? And I'm saying this to say, anybody can say how much time they're going to give you. But how much time are you really going to serve is the question. So this judge
was bigger than money. That was whatever they was doing, if they ain't go to jail, it was bigger than everything.
This judge, and what I'm getting at is, this judge was sentenced to more than 17 years, but he's out of prison. So
you saying he never did the 17 years?
Oh, that's my point. So I'm going to throw in a little dash of something, and I'm going to dash back out of it. You know, like the Tiana Parks, King Hill case. Oh, yeah, she's going to get 15 to 22 years. But how much of the 15 to 22 years is she really going to serve? I mean, make me a believer. You got a judge, and then you got Tiana Parks, who's a nobody. Then you got a judge who's friends with everybody that gets a pass. How much time are these people really going to serve?
So it, well, she probably going to serve everything, because she ain't one of them judges.
It goes to show that they can write down, they can type in anything they want to type in, but will that person actually serve that time? Because it's like, to me, people are hiding little secrets in between because they don't want things to come out, because then it's going to be shameful on a lot of people.
No, and you know what? Ever since you started this, I did my homework, and I'm trying to tell you, that courthouse, 1801, you be wondering, like, what, it was condemned? No, they want to open it up and do something fancy and fresh with it now. It wasn't condemned. They was trying to get all them old judges out of there before this opened up. Because how all these programs closed down in around the same years and era? Not VisionQuest shut down in 2001. Not Slayton's Farm went out in the 90s. No, all these places... And I'm doing my own work, been shut down recently for all these crimes and stuff that's finally coming out. And whoever the judges is, it was bigger than big money. Because if Alex Trebek, not Alex Trebek, Bob Barker was a serious involvement in these prison systems for juveniles, that tells me
What's the name?
It's bigger than a lottery. Huh?
What's the name?
The Price is Right man, Bob Barker, was one of the biggest investors inside these prison systems and juvenile programs. And for that to be so much big money, I just know with all these people, it was just big money. And nobody could get in trouble. I guess nobody was going to get in trouble. I remember seeing the VisionQuest owner. Wow. The owner that owns the whole program. He the CEO of the whole program. If he ain't look like a redneck hillbilly Texas Ranger. His family must got a history of slaves. The way he dressed. I tell you. I never forget the man, because he come to the program with the events. He gets up and say something to everybody. You see him. He had Indian jewelry on and cowboy boots and hats, and he looked like a rich plantationer. That he looked like. Looked like he owned the cotton field of Georgia.
Well, let me ask you about, because, you know, it's public information. Juvenile justice system, there's a young man by the name of Kwasir Easley that was like badly beaten up in there. I mean, did you hear about that?
This is one of the juvenile housing centers.
It's the juvenile justice center where it's a detention center for the youth.
Oh, the youth study center. Yeah. I want to say that came across my phone too. They understaffed. They don't have no way to send these kids. Your investigation proved it. I wanted to work for VisionQuest. So let me just clear this real up on your show. I actually wanted to work for VisionQuest. I had plans on when my son get towards into high school, I was going to go stack this money, because they make about $5,000 a week after taxes. You have to stay there, though. 4 days a week and 3 days you come home. They pay for you to come back and forth. I thought it was sweet. But up until your investigation, don't you know you cracked it open to let me know they ain't even open no more? So I'm actually debating if I'm going to work for these juvenile programs to help the juveniles and bring change and be a thorough staff member like some I knew. And ever since your investigation, come to find out these places just closed down over the last years, couple years or so.
So all this abuse still going on. No one formally charged with Ocean Quest murders. I'm quite sure no one signed a petition saying, I give you permission to take my kid to another country or another state. So you're just, so if you were to die in Florida, who would have ever known?
Nobody. You know what? We was test trials. We are a generation that's messed up if you went through those programs. And they did what they wanted to do. And you know what? It should be a lawsuit soon. That's what I got coming out soon. Because that's what needs to happen. If you could do this for the priest kids and got a $900 billion lawsuit, if you've been involved in this priesthood, nasty, disgusting Catholic stuff, they was doing the Catholic nasty stuff in St. Gabe's to the young kid. They was doing it in all the programs. They need to say, if you've been in Slayton's Farm, St. Gabe's, Vision Quest, any of these juvenile programs in these years to come, then you might be obligated to a lawsuit fund. That's what's next, because we destroyed. They did that on purpose. They've been doing it forever. And you want to get to the late 2000s and the early 2000 millennium and you want to shut them down because y'all about to get caught. It done made billions of dollars. Really, do it even matter? Look how much they was paying the staff. Look how much gas they had to use to travel everybody every day. I ain't the only camp. We weren't the only campsite. Campsites all over. That was a lot of money this program had. It was big money. That's what you call big money. That was bigger than any cartel, mafia organization ever. On a legal basis. Had to be.
Well, you know, there was a child. There was a child victim that said back in 2020 that Judge Conahan didn't let me get to my future. He ruined my life. Another plaintiff said, I feel like I was sold for no reason. Like everybody just stood in line to be sold. And when you went into the program, did you feel like you were being sold? Or did you feel like someone was going to be there to like nurture you, show you different things, care for you?
No, it was nothing like that. You know, it was a guy, a staff member. I'm going to put his name out there. It was a staff member that was here from Philadelphia. He was from Southwest. His name was Harry. If I can remember what his last name was, but they called him Old Head. Literally, that was his name in the program. They're like, Old Head. His name was Old Head. He wanted to be referred to as Old Head. We didn't even call him Harry. His name in the program was Old Head. He was the camp ruler in that on that site. Tall, about 6'5", skinny, long arms. There was a smoker down my way named Baby Talk. Looked like it was his brother. But he was very vicious. Very vicious. Very vicious black man. Out of all the people up there, he was part of whatever was going on. I don't know if he's alive today. The way the COVID went, I probably half of them gone. But his name was Harry something. And he was in there in the early 90s. A major staff member. Guarantee you he knew a lot about what was going on.
So
he traveled from Philadelphia into the mountains every week.
Let's talk about the movie that that reminds you of Vision Quest that people should actually watch.
Oh, you mean a juvenile movie? Me discuss Sleepers.
Sleepers.
Is that it? Sleepers. Yeah. And you know, it's funny that they showed us that in the Youth Study Center. I actually saw that movie for the first time in my life in the Youth Study Center. Ain't that weird? Why would you show us that? Never seen the movie before, but it's that's.
You know, I wanted to tell you this. Someone just sent me a message that said that Harry was like a director.
Yeah, he was a program director. That's it. Somebody said it right.
Okay, so this is really hard for me because, you know, the abuse of anybody to this capacity is totally wrong.
I know, man. I feel bad for people that really got the bad end of the stick. I mean, I got beat. They beat me up and all that type of stuff, you know, because it was hands-on. So I guess the beatings we got, we almost had to expect.
You said they beat you?
Yeah.
They beat you?
Man, they beat you bad. When they put their hands on you, they act like it's a certain amount of time they must be aggressive with you. You could be surrendering. Fall on the ground. Spread your legs and your arms, and they a jump on your spine and your neck with their elbow and fall on it. Everybody grab an arm and a leg, and they choke you out. You surrendered, though. You ain't even was aggressive when they ran up on you. They'll clothesline you with the, and all the staff was huge. Like they only hired football players.
Well, caller, I'd like to thank you for coming on today, but I'd like to have you back next week because there's someone that wants to come on with you that attended Vision Quest, and they would like to talk with you about some of their experiences, and they wanted to know if that would be okay.
Yep, that's cool.
Because apparently this person is saying that you both know some of the same people that was at Vision Quest, and they want to like have a conversation. They want to talk about some things.
We might have been up there at the same
Such
time.
As,
might know each other. Say it again.
That's what I'm kind of feeling okay. like because they want to talk about the trip to Florida. To Yeehaw.
Well, you know what? He sounded like he was in there at the same time. And half the people that was in there with me at this time is probably dead or sitting in one of these prisons for a very long time. And I know some of them are. For a fact, they've been in there since 19. And I'm talking about 19 years old, not the year 19. And I'm 40, in my 40s.
Well, caller, thank you for coming on today. And I look forward to getting you back on next week.
Okay. I appreciate you having me on. I'm hoping things can get aired out, cleared up. Some people might need to express themselves.
Yes, thank you, caller, and have a great night.
You too. Have a great night.
Bye-bye. Guys, listen, I don't ask for people to send me messages like that. You know, it's deep. It's deeper than you can ever imagine. And you don't know who's listening. Obviously, there's a lot of people listening. You know, and it goes back to, it's just not Vision Quest that's involved. You got Human Services, because you're dealing with juveniles, and Human Services would have to play a part in this, you know, transfer of the children type of thing. So it's not like the judge made this call on his own. Someone had to talk to mom, you know, a juvenile. Juveniles never, in 1992, juveniles didn't have a right to make their decision of going into a program without Family Services, DHS being involved. Okay, then you got another huge corporation who's participating in knowing of what's going on. And I believe that. Sysco Foods. Sysco Foods is delivering food to children, to juvenile children. Sysco Foods is, they're a multi-billion dollar company. So you're participating in the abuse of these children. Some form or another, because he seemed to remember Sysco Foods delivering the food, okay? Then you got still the judges out there that were never charged. And you got tons of people that, I mean, getting that message, that really blew my mind, of somebody wanting to come on because their ears are growing and listening. And then you got Ocean Quest, where these kids are going to Hawaii and operating a boat. Juveniles out in the middle of the sea, and Vision Quest founder is not in prison for the rest of his life. This is bigger than big. And maybe we can try to locate Charles Berry to see where he is today, if he's even still alive. You know, I would like to hear his story. I'm quite sure, you know, a lot of people would. Guys, I tell you, it's been such an overwhelming conversation today. But I just wanted to point out, Judge Conahan was sentenced to more, and I'm going to say it again, to more than 17 years, but he's not in prison. I want you guys to let that sink in. Anybody can type in a number on their computer. Any judge can tell you you're getting 25 years. How much of that time will you really serve when they know that there's things that went wrong in the case and they have to conceal a lot of things? Because this judge made over $200 million for selling these children, from being abused to being murdered, never heard of again. No proper funeral services. You know, I like to do something good for the Vision Quest survivors. And there's a list of them, believe me. I mean, to say that you were sold for no reason, like everybody stood in line to be sold, that's overwhelming, you know. And for the judicial system to take part in that and let out someone from jail that's not supposed to be released until 2035. You tell me what's really going on. Guys, can't wait to have you back next week. Over 14 million listeners from the East Coast to the West Coast. Thank you guys so much for joining me. Tommy Torres, see you next week. Same bat time, same bat place. Tommy Torres signing off. Good night, guys. Bye now.
You're listening to It's Confirmed with Tomiko Torres, only on LA Talk Radio.